Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 94, 94 of season 4 of Movie Rough Minute, the daily podcast, where we take a hilarious and poignant journey through the 1989 Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan rom-com, When Harry Met Sally, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today at Docking Bay 94, possibly, is the newly coined Movies by Minute chronicler, Eric Nash. Welcome back, Eric.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's been a treat this week that I've been on, and hope to be on future shows of yours down the road here
Of
again.
course, why not?
Had a good time back in the day with Great Escape, right?
That's right. We did the Great Escape. We had a very, very interesting week then also. And this week, we got the tail end of the movie and parts of the credits. So I appreciate you taking the time to be a part of that also.
Oh yeah, thank you.
As someone who's done Movies by Minute stuff before, you know that the credits aren't always as interesting as the movie itself, but you still can find interesting things to talk about with the credits, or at least I can. because I don't know enough about the background of things that are done in the background in movies. So, mm-hmm. you learn a lot from that. At least I think you do. Some people, so, I don't know. Right. Actually, you know what? You were actually on the very same minute
yeah.
of The Great Escape. You were on 91 through 95. Mm-hmm. So, hey, that's really interesting. I didn't even notice that till right now. What a strange coincidence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, it's something I feel like I've noticed before as well, that I just happen to, if the minutes I feel like are something I like, I actually will, I've done the same minutes for, any one host multiple shows before.
Right. No, but this was purely coincidence. It wasn't that I said, oh, Eric was great on The Great Escape between 91 and 95. That's what I'm going to give him this time. No. It just was random. I was like, okay, Eric, why don't you take these minutes? And, up until this moment, I did not even realize that I had done the same. I mean, I sometimes have that with movies. I'll be watching a movie. I keep a list of like when I watch movies. Like if I watch a movie today, so then I'll look up when, what were all the other dates that I watched that same movie on.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes it'll come out that I watched the same movie like 9 years ago on the same day. Just like randomly. Not even something that I've done on purpose or anything like that. So that's what, I can always go back and say, okay, on this particular day, what movies did I watch? And find that answer. So I find that always fascinating for me. Minute 94 begins with the second gaffer's credit and ends with the Autumn in New York credit. So yesterday we ended the movie, basically started talking about the credits. Today we're continuing to talk about the credits, and it starts off with the second gaffer, Kevin Kelly, right? So I was very curious of what a gaffer is. Do you know what a gaffer is?
I feel like it has something to do with electrical.
Okay.
Is that right?
Yes. It is the chief lighting technician.
Yeah,
it's the head electrician, basically. Responsible for the execution of the lighting plan for the production. And the assistant of the gaffer is known as the best boy, which we shall get to. We'll get there. There's a whole bunch of things about the term gaffer that I wanted to, I actually looked up what is the etymology of the word gaffer, because it's not really a word that you use in normal English. Like, I've never used that in a sentence that has nothing to do with, the chief electrician of a movie. Have you?
No.
Right. So there's a whole bunch of theories as to where the name or the term gaffer comes from. One is that it actually comes from overhead equipment, the removing of overhead equipment, or something that they would do in like Shakespeare era theaters. Where they had this long pole that had a grappling hook on it. And that is known as a gaff. like a gap stick, you know, that type of thing. Another potential explanation is that it's a contraction of the word godfather, and usually it's a type of, it's what people would call like an elderly man or someone whose position entitled them to respect. And then you have the female version of it is a gammer. So you have the gaffer and the gammer, which is like a godmother, godfather, that type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. The F in father and the M in mother. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So there's a play from 1575 known as Gammer Girton's Needle, which uses these words. You know, they refer to the gaffer and the gammer. Sometimes it could be referred to as something that's a master or a governor. And they, as of 1841, they started calling it was the foreman or the supervisor of workmen and things like that. They were known as the gaffer. So yeah, they're basically responsible to manage all the lighting and anything that's related to that with labor and lighting instruments and electrical equipment. They basically work under the DP. And in TV, they work under what's known as the lighting director, the LD. You also have what's known as a gaffer tape.
Yeah.
Right, which is a closed back adhesive tape that's used within the movie and TV industry in order to keep things, you know, in place. Right. And then below that, you have what's known as the best boy, as I mentioned earlier. So we're going to come up shortly to that credit, because, again, it doesn't make sense that the best boy is not right under the, you know, the gaffer, if that's his assistant. Again, I don't know how they choose sometimes, you know, how to where to put people on these lists, you know, when you're doing the credits. You know, sometimes they're random. Sometimes maybe it has to do with the unions. I don't know. I know that when it comes to people who are, you know, above the line, whether you're talking about producers and stuff like that, that's stuff that's in their contract. It says like where they'll be listed in the credits. You know, that you know, my guest from last week, Dana Nachman, I think it was during Plane, Trains, and Automobiles, she and I discussed it. You know, she's a documentary director. So she explained to me a lot of the different things of how, you know, how that works. So, you know, she said it's something that you make sure is in your contract, you know, that where your credit is listed, both either at the beginning of the movie or TV show or at the end, you know, depending on, you know, what your role is and things like that. So then you have what's known as, you know, it goes through all these other different credits here. You know, you have, you know, the different assistants and production coordinators and, you know, in what was really funny is listening to the commentary. You have them just throwing out, they're basically giving shout outs to people. You know, you have like production secretaries and it says Shell Hecht. So yeah. Rob Reiner says this movie would not have been made without Shell. You know, things like that. I don't know what she did, you know, but I just found it really funny. And then you have, you know, the different editors and the mixers and the sound editor. And, you know, you have all the people doing all the recordings and stuff like that. But what really gets me every time is, you know, that you know, when they're going through the list of all these different people, you know, when we look at them, we just see a list of hundreds of names. I mean, they don't really mean very much to us. But someone who's in the production themselves, you know, when they see these names, so they, you know, they know who they are. And therefore it's so much more meaningful for the people who are in the movie industry or TV industry, depending on where the credits are, you know, when you see the names, because then you see the names of the people that you know. You know, whether you're going to be using their real name or using their, you know, a nickname or something like that. You know, so it always gets me when I you know, hear that. You know, when they mention the best boy. So Rob Reiner says to Billy Crystal, hey, why don't you explain to people what the best boy is? Because he goes, in my opinion, you're the best boy, or something like that. So as I mentioned earlier, the best boy is also, he's basically the assistant to the gaffer, which is there's actually three different types of best boys. Sorry, two different type of best boy. There are two different types of best boys. There's the best boy electric and best boy grip, and these are the assistants to the department heads. You have the assistant to the gaffer and the assistant to the key grip, who's in charge of the lighting and rigging. And the best boy acts as the foreman for the department. If it's a woman who's taking that job, then it's known as a best girl. I just always find it really funny that you would call it best boy, as opposed to like giving it a real type of name. Just sounds really, I don't know, juvenile to call it that. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean it's just something to make them feel better or something, or
Because you're the best
like
boy? I don't
yeah.
know.
It's weird.
Yeah, no, it's a strange, thing. I tried figuring out where the this actually term comes from. Basically, what I found was is that it originated as a term for the master's most able apprentice, or it was used sometimes on ships or of the ship's crew. And the earliest known phrase of using the term is in 1931. You have the an article in the Albuquerque Journal that says among electricians, the department head is the gaffer, and his first assistant is the best boy. So they say also sometimes that the best boy is credited as the assistant chief night lighting technician. So I don't know. It just for me, it's a little strange. But my favorite best boy type credit in a movie is from Airplane 2, the sequel. You have they have best boy, and then the next line says worst boy. And they wrote in there
Worst boy.
Adolf Hitler.
Yeah. He was the worst boy.
Yes, that is true. And then they also have credits here for publicists. So like I was really curious. They have two publicists listed here. And I was one of them is Nancy Seltzer and Associates, and the other one is Wilkinson Lipsman. So I tried looking at both of them. And I found some interesting things about it, like the different movies that Nancy Seltzer and Associates are listed in IMDb. They have 14 different movies that they were the publicist for, including Shawshank, A Few Good Men, Amadeus, Misery, When Harry Met Sally, Philadelphia, The Unbearable Lightness of Being. What else? Dead Man Walking, State of Grace, North, and then Last Exit to Brooklyn. Those are the ones that I found. There are a few others, but they were not things that I've ever even heard of, so I didn't even mention them. Amos and Andrew, sorry, that was another one also.
So a few of Rob Reiner's other
Yeah.
movies.
Yeah. So what do you think a publicist does from a movie perspective? Like, what's their job?
I have to imagine, I mean, somewhat related to marketing. I mean, it kind of get getting the word out about the movie, about the about and about the cast and crew. I mean, their roles in it, getting the word out about, hey, this is a Rob Reiner movie. Everyone should go see it.
Right. Okay. More or less, you're right. I mean, basically, they're the in short, their job is to get the critics talking. That's what they need to do. They need to get people to start talking about this movie. That people will want to go see this movie. They do all the media coverage, so therefore they have to have good relationships with the with different journalists and critics and stuff like that. They create the press packets. Which usually has film synopsis, production notes, cast and crew credits, biographies, stills, the whole press kit that you normally give out and stuff like that. They're the ones who organize and schedule press screenings. Sometimes they'll invite journalists to come to the set while things are being shot, and in order to to get more popularity about the whole thing. So the second production company, the Wilkinson Lipsman, again, I couldn't find very much about them, besides the fact that they have only three credits in IMDb. One is, the first one is City Slickers, When Harry Met Sally, and Mr. Saturday Night, which basically tells me that these are all related to Billy Crystal. This is maybe his personal publicist group. I don't know. I tried finding information about either of them like nowadays, but I wasn't able to find anything. About their addresses or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, Nancy Seltzer, it's located in New York. That was all I was able to find. And their office is a 1 minute walk from the Museum of Arts and Design. I don't know why it would actually say that, but okay, I guess so. Then again, it continues with more credits. We get we actually get some of the credits of the songs. Okay, did you notice how many songs there are listed in this in today's credit?
No,
because this movie actually has a lot of songs.
Yeah. Yeah, I've certainly looked at like the soundtrack listing, like from Wikipedia, what they indicate.
Right.
Seems like a lot.
Right. And I also.
But I'm used to a lot with Almost Famous, though.
Ah, that's true. Also, that's a good point. How many did they have in Almost Famous? Do you remember?
Oh, it's like 50 plus.
Wow.
Yeah, because I mean, sometimes there's just a song that plays for like less than 5 seconds. So.
Right. So they have here 11 and a half credits, basically, for songs. You basically have It Had to Be You, Our Love Is Here to Stay, Don't Pull Your Love, Ramblin' Man, Right Time of the Night, Let's Call the Whole Thing Off, When or Where, Ladies' Lunch, The Tables Have Turned, But Not For Me, Plain Q, and La Marseille, which is actually a credit from Casablanca. I found it interesting that they are crediting music in a movie that the characters are watching.
Yeah.
And then the final one is, which gets cut off. We just see the first words of it is Autumn in New York. So is there anything else you want to say about today's credits before we don't get into the script because there is no script. We ended that yesterday. But before we get into today's segment, anything else?
Well, I guess just, again, with the songs here, I mean the at least the couple uses of Gershwin's mm-hmm. of their songs and certainly George, I've been a big fan of him ever since. Like I won't it's not going to be part of what I say later for my top five, but when I saw as a kid, I don't know, early teens maybe at the latest, but Manhattan, Woody Allen movie, and the usage of Rhapsody in Blue, mm-hmm. That's essentially been my favorite, somewhat classical that is, classical but very jazz, in the vein of jazz, in the more classical big orchestra setting.
Yeah.
One of my favorite pieces of music for a long time.
That's very cool. Yeah, that's really cool. All right, so every Thursday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track, Dating Courting Edition, where my guests will give some sort of anecdote, story, adventure, misadventure, or something that happened to them over the course of their life that is somewhat related to dating or courting. So, Eric, you have another story for us? Or a continuation, part two of
really,
your
that's what it is. Yeah, just a continuation, and the thing is that until meeting my fiance, the way I did it, as I described the other day, I really didn't have long term relationships prior to this. I dated a little bit here and there, but never anything really steady. And the crazy, even the crazier thing with her is that, we really didn't date when we kind of started seeing each other, so to speak, starting up a relationship.
Well, because you guys were working together. You got to talk all day at work.
But the one of and what some might consider our first date, we kind of jokingly refer to it as our first or one of our first times that we were with each other and not at the store. It was actually at another store, a comic book shop. You know, she kind of was trying to hit to me, hey, I like you, you know, in that special way, by saying, you know, what are you doing after work today? Oh, I'm stopping by the comic shop. She says, can I, you mind if I go too? So, you know, just hanging out there for, you know, a little bit, and just getting to know each other a little bit more outside of the purview of the old workplace that we had.
Right. Finding out what she likes between Marvel and DC and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then just the continuation of that is that, you know, hey, we still don't kind of do the more typical romantic stuff, but you know, dinners out, we're a little more homebodies, but we do like to do the one thing out in the world, in a big crowd, so to speak, is going to Disney World. We did that twice last year, and we're essentially doing it again twice this year. We have our next one planned here soon to Disney World, but then the second one for this year actually isn't Disney World anymore, and those have all been family events really too. But then our final one at the end of this year, our fourth trip out, is at Disneyland, and that's just going to be the two of us for our honeymoon, just the week or two after we get married in December.
Oh, wow. Wait, being able to go to Galaxy's Edge, or just, is that the goal?
No, the whole parks, you know, because she does not do anything small, you know. There only been one time prior to this relationship that I'd been to Disney World, and I had only done just a Hollywood Studio one day and Magic Kingdom the other, and didn't even get to the other two parks on that trip from 5-6 years ago, whatever it was now. But yeah, we almost always visit all the parks, you know. We did the second one last time. We didn't do Animal Kingdom, but so that's something that'll be a highlight to get back there this time and maybe even touch the rhinos up close and personal with rhinos this time. We're going to try and get.
Wow, that's really cool.
That'll be fun for our boys.
Very cool. All right, thank you for that story. That's great.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, so because you won't be joining us tomorrow, so yeah. we'll you know, skip ahead a little bit, and you know, you can still do Friday's segment. So on every Friday, we do a segment called Weekend Romance, where my guests will give their top five romantic comedies. So, Eric, what have you got for us on that one?
And as you've heard me mention a Wikipedia a few times already, so this is the one last time I'll say it. I came up with a list of what I wanted to look over to see, to try and figure out what romantic comedy films I've seen is their list of romantic comedy films. And so I came up with, I do have definitely a couple, what do you call it when you have a couple extras, honorable mentions. It's like Risky Business and Splash.
Okay.
And Jerry Maguire. And Silver Linings Playbook too. Yeah. My number five would be Groundhog Day, actually. Mm-hmm. And then The Graduate, then High Fidelity. So definitely getting much more into the music that I'm much more generally
into.
Why
does that not surprise me?
High Fidelity, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then number two will be this one, When Harry Met Sally. So once again, you might kind of guess what number one's going to be is Princess Bride.
Yeah. Oh, you're just copying the other list. If only Billy Crystal had been in High Fidelity.
Yeah.
You know, that would have been
top three for him.
There you go. Yeah, that's great. That's a great list. Thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
Once again, everyone can come back on Saturday and listen to the tally, you know, of all of these three segments that we've been doing. You know, Meg Ryan Monday, Harry Burns Hump Day, and Weekend Romance. Tomorrow, I will have my final guest, who will give his rendition of the stuff, and then on Saturday, I'll be back here with my co-closer, Jay Cluett, from the Con Air podcast and from the Deep Blue Sea podcast. So he'll be here with me to go over the tallying of all of these things. So Eric, is there anything else you want to say about When Harry Met Sally in general?
Oh yeah, I mean, like, obviously, it's high up there for me as a rom-com. And I mean, whenever anyone talks about rom-coms generally, you know, what I can recall. I mean, this is the one I really think about, you know.
More than The Princess Bride.
High on my list. Yeah, I mean, because I mean, like I said, I just went to Wikipedia and saw what they had listed and went by that. Okay, what are my favorites out of this list, you know, mm-hmm. or what have I even seen is what I came up with first. You know, because that's so much so fantasy is it's really its other big genre, you know. But yeah, I mean, it's just the one go to. I mean, like I generally am not in general, just the idea of rom-coms aren't that's not a thing. Oh yeah, I'm a rom-com fan. No, that's not something I would say, but I'll say it just like I'm not a big fan of country music, but I like Johnny Cash and Dolly Parton and Willie Nelson.
Okay. That's fair.
Patsy Cline.
Have you ever seen Walk the Line?
But yeah. Oh yeah. I remember when that came out and I enjoyed that pretty well.
Yeah, that's a great thing all about Johnny Cash's music. Oh, yeah. Yeah. All right, great. So, Eric, thank you very much for joining me this week. Do you want to, for one last time, tell people where they can find Eric Nash?
Yeah, well, I mean, definitely I just want to plug the thing that you've been so nice and giving me something of a title for. Everyone should check out moviesbyminutes.com. To find a ton of great movies or shows that cover these movies in these ways, and I've got my couple of my shows are on there and Watch My Minute and Almost Famous Minute but check out a ton of the others hopefully.
All right,
everyone should do.
Great, thank you very much for that. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcast you might be using to listen to this show. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So until tomorrow, I'll have what she's having.
I'll have what she's having.
Gave me a thrill with all your faults. I love you still. It had to be you. Wonderful you. Had to be you.